SMA News Today, daily digital coverage of spinal muscular atrophy.
Welcome to the SMA News Today podcast, episode 17. I'm your host, Kevin Schaefer. Joining us today is Shane Burkaw. Shane is the founder and president of the nonprofit organization Laughing at My Nightmare. He is also the author of several books, one of which is the memoir of the same name, the children's book, Not So Different, What You Really Want to Ask About Having a Disability, and the upcoming book, Strangers Assume My Girlfriend Is My Nurse, which we'll definitely be talking about today. So Shane, thanks for joining us today.
Hey, Devin, thanks for having me. I'm happy to be here.
Absolutely. And just as a note to listeners out there, now Shane's humor can be pretty R-rated, but I promise we'll keep it clean for this episode. So
we will. I've washed my mouth with soap and I'm ready to.
We're good. Yeah, exactly. If you want all that humor, you can read his book, follow his blog. You'll find plenty of it there. But so Shane, to start off, I just want to talk a little bit about your upcoming book. So whereas Laughing at My Nightmare is a memoir that encompasses all kinds of stories from your life, and then your second book was a children's book designed to help children better understand people with disabilities. This new one is focused on your relationship with your girlfriend, Hannah, and kind of all the stereotypes you guys deal with every day. So could you talk about the genesis of this project and just what you hope to accomplish through it?
Yeah, so going back to my first memoir, looking back at it, you'll see and I see that this book, which was, it documents from the moment I was born up until about the start of college. And in that time frame of my life, the biggest theme for me was trying to convince other people that I am normal. And that was such a big, important aspect of my life for so long, was trying to fit in, trying to show the world that, you know, even though I have a disability and even though I use a wheelchair, I'm still normal. And I spent a ridiculous amount of time worrying about fitting in and trying to be cool and show everyone that I was normal. But I think it was kind of a negative thing. And during college and the years that followed my college life, I realized that being normal is not important. No one's normal. We all have things about us that make us different from other people, and those are the things that we need to celebrate. And so, in a way, my next book, Strangers Assume My Girlfriend Is My Nurse, it kind of shows that transition of moving from a very, you know, inward, self-focused fear of being normal to looking more outward at society and seeing how the world really doesn't understand people with disabilities and people that use wheelchairs. And so this book focuses on all of those misperceptions and specifically how they are or how they play out in the relationship that I have with my girlfriend Hannah. We face all kinds of ridiculous assumptions about our lives because she is an able-bodied person and I use a wheelchair. And so this book kind of dives into all that. And it's not in a way that, you know, I don't hit you over the head with lessons. I'm not preaching or anything like that. But I use stories from my life as examples of the kind of prejudice and the difficult social barriers that people with SMA face on a daily and lifelong basis.
Absolutely. And you mentioned, I think, in a Facebook post when you're promoting the, or a blog post promoting this book, just some of the comments you've received on, because you and Hannah have a YouTube channel. And so what are just some of the comments that you've received that about, you know, when people just can't buy that, you know, you two are in a relationship?
Oh, man, it's so bizarre. So on one of our videos that went somewhat viral, the comment sections were filled with all these theories about what must be wrong with Hannah, or what angel she was using to attack me or exploit me or take my money, because so many people couldn't accept the fact that a intelligent, funny, beautiful woman would ever want to date someone in a wheelchair. You know, it wasn't something they had ever seen before, and so they didn't believe it. And so the comments were difficult to read, as people offered up all these bizarre theories about how we were only doing it for attention, and how Hannah must be after my money, or things like that, or how she must be a family member posing as my girlfriend.
Wow.
To even more, you know, straight up, like, attacks, like, this is disgusting, and this is vile, and to, like, really inappropriate, like, intimate questions about our intimate life, and asking, you know, why anyone would ever want to do that with me. Things like that. So it became clear that a lot of the world still doesn't understand interabled relationships and the fact that they exist and that they are amazing for both sides of the relationship, and that neither of us are sacrificing anything to be with each other. And so, yeah, that's been some of the feedback that we've gotten.
I'm sure. And it's crazy. Just the conspiracy theories and all that you said, it's amazing people think that way. But I'm glad that, you know, your book will hopefully defy some of those stereotypes. But on that note of your relationship with Hannah, so you and Hannah moved in together earlier this year, and this was your first time living away from home, because, you know, I know from your book, you lived at home during college and everything. So what has that experience been like for both of you, just the transition, and, you know, what are some of the obstacles you've had to overcome since this?
Yeah, so from the moment that Hannah lived in Minnesota and I lived in Pennsylvania for the first 2 years of our relationship, and I lived with my parents, and they were my primary caregivers along with my brother. And so when we first had the idea to move in together, obviously, you know, being in a relationship long distance for 2 years, we were very emotionally ready to be together all the time. So we really wanted to make that happen. But there were some practical things that we had to think about, like who would be doing my care out here in Minnesota, and what would the financial situation would look like, and what would day-to-day life what was, whenever Hannah would visit, which happened often in our 2-year long distance relationship, she would always do all of my hair and love doing it. And it, to us, it never felt like a chore or a caregiving type situation. Even though, you know, she was helping me get dressed, we felt like it was more of just hanging out together and something that we did together as a couple. And so we decided that Hannah would be doing my hair out here in Minnesota. And that was, you know, a conversation, many conversations that we had. We have family and friends in the area that can help out with parts of it here and there, when she has other commitments and stuff like that. But it felt kind of, I mean, it was a little bit scary to leave the caregiving situation with my parents that I had been in my whole life. But at the same time, I knew that no one on earth does that stuff better than Hannah. And so I trusted her completely to take over that role. As we've been living together for 6 months, or a little more than that now, it's been a learning process. You know, we have to learn how to balance all of the things that both of us need to get done in our day-to-day life with all of the caregiving type stuff that I need to do. But it's helping us to communicate with each other, and things like time management and, you know, like boring adult stuff like that is a thing now for us. But overall, it's going really well. Hannah's not here to offer her opinion, so I should be lying. But from every conversation that we've had, she's loving it. And there are moments where, you know, things are tough, where we get into an argument about something, like all couples. But it's been overwhelmingly positive and full of love. And I've really been enjoying it.
That's really cool. What? And it's interesting you say that because, you know, I've talked to other people with SMA and interable couples, and they have all kinds of perspectives on this issue of, like, you know, having your significant other as your caregiver. Some refuse, like, I've talked to some who refuse to have, they don't want that at all because they don't want to feel dependent on their significant other. And then others, you know, in your situation. And so I think it really does just, you know, you do what works best for you. But
And like I said, the communication is a really big part of it. It's not like she and I never talk about this caregiving situation.
Right.
I'm always checking in with her to see how she's feeling physically and emotionally as it relates to my caregiving. And we have an open line of communication. So we've established that if there is ever a time when she feels like she needs more assistance with my caregiving activities, we'll talk about it and figure out a plan from there. But yeah, so far it's working well for us. But I can see all sides of it, you know.
Sure.
It makes sense to me why other people may not want to do that. But yeah.
That's really cool. No, I'm glad it's working out for you. And we'll talk a little bit more about kind of your daily life toward the end of the episode. But first, I want to get back a little more to talking about your writing and sort of the genesis of Laughing at My Nightmare, the blog and everything. So, you know, humor is at the heart of all your work. You use humor to convey messages about disability and to combat stereotypes. So when you tackle subjects like, you know, going to the bathroom and your sex life in a humorous manner, what are just some of the reactions you've gotten over the years from people?
Well, there's the obvious, which is people telling me that I'm inspiring, which is always funny when I've written a post about, like, how I poop, and people are somehow inspired by that. I usually try to nicely, you know, show gratitude for their support, but also pick their mind a little bit about why they're feeling inspired. But I think that the humor helps people not feel so confused and afraid of disability. I think that that is the biggest barrier in society for people with disabilities, is just a lack of knowledge and kind of a fear that's out there. Because of that lack of knowledge, people don't know about our lives in a knowledgeable way. And so humor allows people to approach these subjects in a non, you know, a non-scary atmosphere, where they can read and laugh about, you know, how I use the bathroom, and they don't have to just straight up ask me, you know, how do you do that?
Right.
And so that is kind of why I use humor. In terms of the reactions, I've seen that people are really appreciative of it, because it allows them to see life from my shoes, and I think that that helps them reframe some of their own misconceptions about disability. Sometimes people don't like the humor. When I, in the same piece, tackle a subject like death, but I do it in a friendly way, I've gotten people who are like, you know, you really shouldn't be laughing about that kind of thing. Take it down. And I mean, everyone's entitled to their own opinion, and I'm not forcing anyone to read my work, but I do believe that life is better when you look at it from a humorous perspective. And living that way has helped me a lot in my life. And so that is kind of why I want to share that with other people. So, yeah.
Absolutely. And, you know, when you first started writing seriously and, you know, watching your blog grow, who were some of your biggest inspirations?
Oh, man. So my favorite writer is a guy named George Saunders, who mostly writes short stories. But he is incredible with his prose and his ability to insert emotion into the things that he's writing about. And so he's always been an inspiration to me. David Sedaris is another humorist that I really look up to. I would say my dad and my own grandfather, both of whom are writers, helped me out along the way, and I looked up to them. I And then also the people that read my work and reached out to me to offer their support or their appreciation were also a really big influence on everything that I did, because it's tough to feel like you're making an impact if you don't get feedback. And so it was that feedback that really pushed me to keep going and helped me know that what I was doing was important, at least to those people.
Absolutely. And it's funny you mentioned David Sedaris. He's a North Carolina native, so he's very popular around here as well.
Oh, nice.
Yeah, very cool. Well, and switching gears just a little, so I did want to talk with you about Spinraza for a little bit. So I know you started Spinraza about a year ago. So could you talk about what that process has been like for you and what changes you've noticed since starting the treatment?
Yeah, so when I found out about the treatment, I had not been keeping up to date on all of the advancements in the search for a treatment. So I had never even heard of Spinraza until the moment it was approved by the FDA. And receiving that email out of the blue was, I think it will always be one of the most surreal moments in my life. The idea of a treatment or a cure has always been kind of like this far off, unrealistic hope for me. Something that, like, you know, I knew or I hoped would eventually happen, but probably not in my lifetime. It just wasn't something that I gave a lot of thought to. So then to suddenly get an email that's like, hey, we found this thing that might very well stop your disease from ever progressing. It was incredible. And I definitely cried with my brother. and that was all great. But then the next day, I didn't have that same wave of joy. I didn't really know how to feel. I've lived my whole life with SMA, and I've come to terms with SMA, and I love my life with SMA, and Spinraza was going to greatly alter my future, and not to mention it came with all kinds of complications and you know, possible side effects and things like that that I had to consider. So in the beginning, I didn't know if I even wanted to get the treatment, which, you know, some people might be like confused by that. Excuse me. The way I saw it, though, hold on, excuse me.
No problem. Actually, while you're taking a break there, I'm glad you said that, because I mean, I can totally relate, and I've written about this as well, because you're exactly right that it is something that, you know, while it was great news, it was also a lot to take in for those of us who are adults with SMA and who've lived with it our whole lives, and, you know, something that it would interfere with that and also be, you know, a process of injections and all these other things. It, you know, it was definitely a lot to consider, and so I totally understand what you're saying there.
Yeah, it was tough. And I spent a few months considering it, and kind of looking into the insurance, which is a whole other topic.
That's another episode there.
but I did eventually decide that stopping the progression was worth all of the potential difficulties that the drug presented. So I went through with it, and I began receiving it about a year ago after an 8-month battle with my insurance. And there have been no drastic, like, oh my God, I'm so much stronger type moments. But my goal from the beginning has been to stop the progression. Here and there, I notice little things, like I can hold my head up longer than I used to be able to, or I'm able to swallow a little bit easier. And those sound insignificant, maybe, but to me, they're pretty important. And so it's been cool to see that happen. The injections themselves are nerve-wracking a little bit. Literally.
Yeah.
But I've been lucky in that they haven't been painful or really difficult yet. But yeah, it's been a good process. And just knowing that I shouldn't be declining anymore really redefines the way I think about my future. And so that alone is a benefit that is really irreplaceable. And it's been big for me.
Absolutely. And I, correct me if I'm wrong, but you do yours through the cervical injections. Am I right?
I do, yeah.
Okay, that's the method I do as well. So it's
Doesn't it suck?
Yeah, it's fun. Well, I always joke, I'm like, hey, it's shot in the neck day, you know, but it's, I don't know, it's kind of funny. It's actually been like, I mean, I was nervous about it the first time and I had a lot of anxiety about the whole process. And then after I got through the first time, I was like, ah, this wasn't too bad. But it's always my doctors and whoever I'm with is always more nervous than I am going into them. When my dad first heard that they were going to do it in the neck, he was kind of freaking out. So, but
yeah, I've seen some horror stories about the other methods.
Right.
So I feel kind of lucky in a way that this was the only way that they were able to do it for me.
Yeah.
Because it doesn't hurt. And as long as they go in the right way, I'll be fine.
Right. Exactly. Well, I'm glad it's working out for you. And kind of on that note, just going back to your daily life and, you know, and you and Hannah's as well. So you obviously stay busy between writing and speaking engagements and then managing your nonprofit. So I'm curious what a typical day of the week looks like for you and for Hannah as well, like just a typical day.
Yeah, so Hannah is a full-time college student right now. She's a senior at Carleton College in Minnesota. And she's also a varsity swimmer. And she has a job, so she's really busy as well. But both of us wake up around 6-7. She helps me get ready, and then I either write or answer emails in the morning, and then she typically arranges to be home around lunch, or I arrange for someone to come over to help me out, with lunch. And then in the afternoon, I do a variety of things. I do speaking engagements, both online and in person. I may write more if I had a good morning of writing and I feel like I'm on a hot streak. I keep going with it. Or I'm doing more outreach type stuff, like looking for opportunities either for my nonprofit or for me as a writer, Hannah usually comes home in the evening and we'll make dinner or we go out. And then at night we hang out. I love sports. I follow follow the NFL and the NBA and pretty much every major sport. I'm a big fan. So I do that. She does homework, or we have date night, or occasionally I'll have an event for something. But it's, yeah, we're living like two old people, just in our boring day-to-day life. But I like the life of, you know, being a writer, and I get a lot of energy and satisfaction from just being here at my computer, thinking up new ideas and doing all that kind of stuff. So yeah, that's a day-to-day life. And then, you know, we've been lucky to be able to travel here and there, but that's not a day-to-day type thing.
Sure, sure. Yeah, you were in Europe recently, right?
Yeah, we did London and Paris over the summer. Very just cool. For fun. And I had never been overseas. As you know, it's very difficult to fly with SMA.
Yeah.
For a variety of reasons. But we made it work with a car seat that we adapted. And so we did London and Paris, and I'm really grateful that I got to do that.
Gotcha. That's really cool. Yeah, I know. And for our listeners out there, if you want to see more of that trip, you can go on Shane and Hannah's YouTube channel and see all the videos of that European adventure. So. But yeah, very cool. Yeah, I was about to say, you don't have a boring life. What are you talking about? But, well, Shane, you know, again, thanks for coming on today. And just in closing, I was going to ask if you have just any advice you want to give to other people with SMA or other physical disabilities out there, whether it's about living independently or dating or anything else.
Yeah. So for long periods of time in my life, I thoroughly believed that I would never find someone that loved me or live independently. Those felt impossible. But now, I'm in an amazing relationship. I'm living with Hannah on my own. And I think that what all of this has shown me, that even when you are certain that that had never happened to you, it's still super possible. Follow your passions and, you know, focus on what makes you happy, and things will fall into place. I think that by focusing on writing, and really only worrying about that, that led to all of this, that I'm able to do now. And so, if you are out there and you're feeling like, you know, down on whatever situation you're in, keep your head up and, you know, focus on your hobbies and your passions or your career, and things will be okay. I didn't think they would be, but they all turned out to be. So I guess that would be my biggest piece of advice.
Absolutely. I think that's great. And yeah, no, thanks for sharing that. And no, thanks again for coming on. And when does your next book come out?
That will be out in April of next year. But if you'd like to pre-order it. You can do that anywhere. The books are sold really online. And again, the name of the book is Strangers Assume That My Girlfriend Is My Nurse. So if you Google that or my name, you'll be able to find a link to pre-order.
Awesome. Well, Shane, just again, thanks for joining us. This was great. And yeah, I encourage all listeners to go pre-order that today.
Awesome. Thank you, Kevin.
Absolutely. And for our listeners, and for our listeners out there, you can find out more about Shane and his nonprofit at www.laughingatmynightmare.com. And he's also all over social media. And as he said, his latest book has come out in April of 2019. And for more stories like this, subscribe to this podcast, where you can listen to all kinds of stories about people in the SMA community. We are available on iTunes, SoundCloud, Spotify, and here on our website at www.smanewstoday.com. Be sure to follow SMA News Today for daily digital coverage of spinal muscular atrophy. I'm Kevin Schaefer, community editor. We will see you next time.